Welcome to today's episode of CMDA's Dental Soundbites. This is Dr. Bill Griffin coming to you once more from CMDA headquarters in Bristol, Tennessee. The Christian Dental Association has members across the country, and my frequent travel allows me to meet many of you along the way. But if any of you ever venture anywhere near Bristol, perhaps Knoxville, Tennessee, Asheville, North Carolina, or wherever, please feel free to stop by. I'd be happy to give you a tour of the beautiful facility the Lord has blessed us with, and you can meet some of the great team members who seek to serve you so that you can serve others. Today's guest, dental hygienist Diane Watterson, has utilized her God-given abilities in tremendous ways over the years. In addition to her time as a dental hygienist, Diane has written extensively in various well-known dental publications, such as Dental Economics and RDH Magazine. She's the co-author of Foundations for Periodontics for the Dental Hygienist, a text used in many dental hygiene programs. She's also published three other books, and she's been honored by the Dentsply and the Colgate companies for her leadership in the dental profession. Most of you know that the Dentistry Today publication creates an annual list of the country's top consultants and speakers, and Diane has been a part of this list every year since 2006. Among her professional affiliations are the American Association of Dental Office Managers, the American Academy of Dental Hygiene, the American Dental Hygienist Association, and Saving the Best for Last, drum roll please, the Christian Medical and Dental Association. She and her husband Dave live in Lexington, North Carolina, and have four sons and seven grandchildren. I get to meet some very cool people as CMDA's Vice President for Dental Ministries, and this is indeed one of those special opportunities. Let's check in with Diane now. Diane, I very much appreciate the wisdom you have shared with the dental profession over the years. In fact, as a practice owner for over three decades, I can say that your advice was instrumental in my effort to direct our practice's hygiene department. It's a privilege for me to be able to thank you personally, and I gratefully welcome you to CMDA's Dental Soundbites podcast.
Thank you very much.
Now, over the course of your career, you've written extensively for Dental Economics and RDH magazines. You've lectured at various meetings across the nation, and you've been recognized as a national leader among the many speakers in our profession. What has your journey been like? Did you have any idea when you completed your dental hygiene training that the Lord would give you such an influential platform in the dental profession?
No, I did not have any idea that I would be able to do the things that I've done. You know, I started this journey back in 1972 when I answered an ad in our local newspaper for a dental office needing a quote unquote receptionist. I had just graduated from high school. And so I answered the ad, and the doctor who hired me, he said this to me. He said, "Well, I think you're a little young for this job, but I'm going to give you a chance because your high school principal gave you such a good recommendation." that was my beginning. And I've told this story many times about my introduction into dental assisting. I had been in this practice about 2 years, knew nothing about the back, and really stayed away from the back as much as I could. And one day, our lone chairside assistant went to lunch and never came back. I mean, never came back. And the doctor had two crown preps on his schedule for that afternoon, and the hygienist had a full schedule. So he said to me, he said, "Well, Diana, I reckon you'll just have to help me." Well, I laugh when I think of that day because I was really his only option. So, but bear in mind, I had never, ever held a suction device, and I didn't know diddly squat about dental assisting, but he was a great teacher. And I found that I really did like assisting. He was like an artist with a drill instead of a paintbrush. And so after that experience, he did eventually hire a dental assistant, but I helped him for several weeks until he could find somebody. And so I took the plunge, applied to hygiene school, and graduated in 78 from dental hygiene school. So,
well, that's great.
Even with that, I never dreamed my career would take the direction it took.
Well, that's great how the Lord used something that you never would have prayed for and gave you great initiative to get more involved in the clinical aspect of dentistry.
Yeah, I called it my baptism by fire into chairside assisting.
One of the things that I really appreciate about dentistry, and I'm sure you do too, is the highly preventative nature of the treatment that we provide. Because if we can help patients develop good home care habits and come in regularly for the professional cleanings, then unless they have a very high rate of disease, then we can help keep them almost all healthy. There's an interesting, obscure passage in the book of Ecclesiastes that speaks of some of the physical changes that occur in old age, one of which is described as, "And the grinders cease because they are few." I've read a couple of commentators that think that the guy was actually that Solomon was actually talking about teeth here, but we have the advantage to hopefully make sure people have several grinders as they progress in their lives. Have you enjoyed the preventive aspect of dental hygiene over the years as I have?
Well, I certainly have, Bill, and I'll tell you, for me as a dental hygienist, looking back over my career, observing a patient with just horrible gingiva and just disease in their mouth, like tissue, we would say like hamburger almost, to go through a series of appointments with me and then taking that patient from a state of disease to a state of health, a state of good dental health. I mean, that was the most gratifying thing I think I'd ever done in my life. And it really gave me this feeling of doing something good in the world. So, and I also found that doing dental hygiene, you're really working one-on-one with people. And I found that connecting with my patients made it rewarding and even fun. So, you know, all patients are not easy to love, but a hygienist or a dentist who does not love his or her patients will have a hard time forming those connected relationships. And if you don't have connected relationships with your patients, then your job becomes, well, just a job. So that was the preventive part. Helping people attain good oral health was so, so gratifying, but also forming those connected relationships with patients.
Now, over the years that you've been involved in dental hygiene, what are some of the main clinical changes that you've seen during your career? How do hygienists practice differently today than they did when you first started?
Well, primarily technology, these intraoral cameras and using magnification, headlamps, even the rise of the DSO or the franchise dental offices, that's all newer. That was not in existence when I started into dental hygiene. Ramped up infection control even that we have had to implement in our COVID days. But, you know, speaking of that, I read recently where dentists and dental hygienists who were once thought to be the highest risk category for contracting COVID in office, that hasn't happened. And I think it's because we use good infection control already before COVID. But there have been a number of things, and I've really felt, especially since COVID, I really felt for those clinically practicing dentists and dental hygienists.
Yes. One of the changes I've noticed is when I was in dental school, bleeding gums weren't that big a deal. I mean, a little bit of bleeding here and there, as long as it seemed that a patient was likely to keep their teeth for life, that was okay. But the more and more we look into the role of inflammation and how oral inflammation can be connected with inflammatory problems in the rest of the body, the more we realize that our goal is much more for our patients than just helping them keep their grinders for life. It's fighting that inflammation so that we're not stirring up trouble in other parts of the body.
That's true. I think the mouth is connected to the rest of the body, and so the mouth actually can be viewed as the portal for the rest of the body. So if you have inflammation, chronic inflammation in the oral cavity, then you have the potential for non-oral distant sites for those bacteria to migrate to.
Yes, it took us a while to discover that, but better late than never, I guess.
Yes.
Now, how have you seen the role of a dental hygienist within the overall dental team change over the years?
Well, there have been some changes, I think, with the new generation of dentists that are coming on board and taking over some of the older dental practices. Dental hygienists can be the anchor for the practice if a dentist is retiring and for patients coming in wanting to see familiar faces. But I think also your question, the answer would be that it depends on which state you live in also, because some states have really implemented some changing ideas about how dental hygienists can be used in the practice, and they've expanded the scope of dental hygienists in some states. So in some states, hygienists with increased education can provide more clinical care than they could in the past, such as simple extractions and simple restorations and those kinds of things. So we are in an evolving time right now for dental hygienists. And I see in the future, I see that there will be more states that will increase the scope of practice for dental hygienists as we move forward.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's not just one cohesive standard, but each state is going to have different ideas as to what hygienists should be involved in. But I certainly am grateful for all the skills that they have enabled my patients to benefit from over the years.
Yes.
Now, one of the biggest effects that your teaching specifically has had on my former practice in Newport News, Virginia, is that you inspired me to look not just at the overall financial condition of my practice, but also consider the hygiene department as its own entity. So in doing this, I was able to consider the hygiene department's overhead, its revenue, and how to set fees in such a way that the related hygiene expenses were covered. And this was really eye-opening, not just for me, but also for my hygienists. What inspired you, Diane, to analyze the numbers of the dental hygiene department separately from the rest of the practice?
That's a great question, but I look at a dental practice as far as the providers are concerned. Their hygienists and dentists are both producers in the practice, but yet what they do focuses on different things. And so I do see different departments within a dental practice, with hygiene being one. And I think we have to look at the numbers if we're going to be astute business people. Certainly, we want to keep our businesses healthy financially. I'll never forget, years ago, I was consulting in a practice up in New York, and the dental hygienist, I interviewed all the staff members separately, and the dental hygienist sat down with me that day, and she looked at me and said these words. She said, "I don't really know why you're here, but I'll tell you one thing, I need a raise." And I thought that was a kind of a direct way to start. And I said, "Well, are you aware of your salary to production ratio here?" And she looked at her eyebrows kind of went up. She said, "I don't even know what that is." I said, "Exactly. I know what your salary to production ratio is." And I said, "You are well above the benchmark right now." I said, "Now, we really like the salary to production ratio to be, we want hygienists to do about 33%, to make about 33% of what they produce as a benchmark." But she was well up into the 50s. And I said, "Now, look, this has nothing to do with the quality of care you provide, but I said, I think your problem is we're way too much downtime in your schedule. So we're going to have to work on that before we can get you a raise." So, you know, I do think the numbers are really, really important. And I think since dental practices are businesses, we should be engaged in keeping our practices healthy and thriving. So understanding the metrics of the dental department, different departments in the dental practice, is very, very important. I mean, if we don't look at our numbers, how will we know if we're operating efficiently or not? We won't. And so it's very important.
Yes, you're reminding me of a time when I had a consultant come into my practice, and this was before I was considering the hygiene department as its own separate entity. And after reviewing our information, she just came out with a statement, "Your hygiene department is just a mess." And my three hygienists were rather offended by that statement because they didn't quite know what she was talking about. So whatever we're doing, verbal skills are really important for sure.
Yes.
And certainly any dental practice needs to seek to provide excellent care for our patients and also maintain the financial viability of the practice. Can you speak a little bit to that relationship between quality of care and the financial health of the practice?
Well, I think there is a direct relationship between quality of care and financial health in the practice. And I'll tell you, as a consultant for many years, I'm reminded of what Jesus said about it is the sick who needs a physician, not the well. Mm-hmm. And I have been in all kinds of practices, but I'll tell you, most of the practices that I consulted in called me because there were problems, and often there were financial problems in the practice. They were not financially healthy. There are lots of reasons that dental practices get in trouble with finances, but I can tell you the biggest one that I saw as a consultant was owners who did not know how to manage their finances well. I used to attribute that to poor teaching in dental school, that they don't teach people about financial concerns in a dental practice. But all the same, I know that practices that are healthy financially, these practices are able to take better care of the people who work there, and they're able to pay good wages and so on and so forth. So dental practices have really high overhead costs compared to some of the other professions. In the big three being dental staff salaries, dental supplies, and lab fees. Those are the mm-hmm. big three. And then there's a whole bunch more smaller overhead categories. So quality of care is related to staff quality as well, and to hire and keep good people in the practice, I think they have to be paid well. So here's my little mantra on this. Above average practices do above average dentistry, they hire above average people, and they pay above average wages to people who do above average work.
That's good.
So that's kind of the way I look at it.
That's good. And as I'm listening to you, it strikes me that there are two potential ditches on either side of the road for a dentist. One ditch is not considering the financial well-being of the practice. The other ditch is making finances the chief goal. And either, obviously, it prevents us from truly honoring Christ with what would be called a healthy, Christ-honoring practice. And in that regard, I've greatly appreciated your commitment to provide consulting that takes the moral high road. In contrast to this, I remember about a decade ago taking a few team members with me to a dental seminar in Chicago. There was a hygienist speaking at the seminar whose entire presentation related to how one could maximize income from the dental hygiene department. One hygienist, an advocate of the speaker's approach, spoke about how she was able to perform four quadrants of scaling and root planing on a patient in less than an hour, creating practice income of over $1,000 for that hour. Mm. Now, several in the room erupted in applause, but needless to say, I was not particularly impressed. As Jesus once said, you cannot serve God and mammon, and they've made their choice. Have you seen or heard of similarly financially motivated practice advice?
Unfortunately, there are unethical, money-driven people in every profession, including dentistry. But what I know is that if business owners operate their businesses honestly and ethically, and that also includes managing their debt, and if they treat their staff members and patients with respect and care, they will see their practices grow and thrive just like manna from heaven. Mm. They'll be blessed with more business that they can even do. And the great trap, though, that so many dentists fall into is this debt trap. So they think they have to start out with all the best of everything, and they're unwilling to be patient and build their practices over time. So when the debt load becomes too heavy, then the business owner takes on a mindset that is actually driven by debt. Mm-hmm. Often leads to overdiagnosis, stress on staff members, overall discontent. I have seen this over and over.
I wish that we could communicate that thoroughly to, especially to our new graduates from school, to recognize both personally and professionally that some things take time, and entering into debt to acquire things prematurely can really come back to haunt us.
Yeah, it sure does.
Now, Diane, during my career in private practice, I was greatly blessed with three dental hygienists who stayed with me for 25 years or more. And it was such a privilege to collaborate with them in attaining and maintaining our patients' dental health. I really felt like we were a team dedicated above all else to the well-being of our patients. Yet many in dental hygiene don't practice that long. Many burn out. They lose their zeal for the profession. What are some of the key factors that determine whether or not a hygienist's career is purposeful and satisfying?
Well, you know, contrary to what many dentists believe, the number one predictor of job satisfaction is not money. It's sincere appreciation. And I'll tell you, when a staff member, whether it be a hygienist, anybody in the office, when that person is treated with respect and the owner makes an effort to show appreciation for this person's efforts, that usually leads to longevity. Now, people leave for all kinds of reasons, but it usually leads to longevity in the practice. I can tell you from my personal experience, my first job as a dental hygienist was with a wonderful doctor in Asheboro, North Carolina. And he was the best boss I ever had in all my years. And I told him once after I'd left there to stay home with my children when they were little, I told him, I said, if I could bottle and sell what you know about making staff members feel appreciated, I would be a rich person if
wow.
I could do that. He, you know, the things though that he did didn't cost him one red cent, but he, like sometimes at the end of the day, he'd say, ladies, I couldn't have done it without you today. And we knew he meant it. Mm. He always made a big deal out of our birthdays, always to the point of embarrassment sometimes. Every patient would go, hey, did you know today's Diane's birthday? And just things like that. He always buys a cake. And we had a guy in our practice who was a baker. And so he liked doing business with him, you know, so it helped the baker. And he was always ordering cakes for us. Mm-hmm. And he, when he went on vacation, he was just so thoughtful. He would sometimes bring us back some little memento of his vacation. It was just, he was a precious human being, and he loved us. We knew he loved us. And I'll tell you, for me as a hygienist, and this was my first job out of hygiene school too, so sometimes he would come in to check my patient, and he, after he checked my patient, he'd push back and he'd say, boy, Diane did a great job on your teeth today. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, my head would just about explode. It mm-hmm. just made me feel so good as a young hygienist to have those words of affirmation to my patient, not just to me, but to my patient. Mm-hmm. So I thought he walked on water. And I'll tell you, I didn't make outstanding money in that practice, but I was more satisfied there than any place I ever worked just because of him. And it wasn't that his dentistry was so outstanding either. It was just that he just loved us so much, and he showed us, and not just me, all of us. He was that way with all of us in the practice. And I guess I'm lucky that I had that kind of experience, because prior to that, I had not had that kind of experience. I'd worked with someone who was very demanding and who was hard to please. And I kind of got the idea that, you know, they're all like this. But when I had two extremes, I guess, one really tough office experience and then one really wonderful office experience. But in my job as a consultant, I often worked with doctors who were having problems with staff turnover. And you talk about a stressful situation when you just cannot keep staff. Well, when that's the situation, when a doctor calls me and says, Diane, I'm about to lose my mind. I cannot keep good staff members. I can just about guarantee that it's the doctor. There's a problem there. And I was in a practice situation out in one of the Midwestern states one time, and I did my day of observation. After I interviewed staff members, I knew exactly what her problem was. We went to dinner that evening, and she was very direct, and she said, well, have you seen anything that you can solve my problem with that I can't keep good staff members? Mm-hmm. And I looked at her and I said, I hope you and I are still going to be friends when I have to tell you what I'm going to tell you. But I think you're paying me to be honest. And I'm going to tell you, I would not work for you as a staff member. I said, you can't have these girls leaving at the end of the day in tears. And you have got to learn how to communicate on a whole different level with your staff members, or else this problem is going to continue. Now, if you'll let me, I'll help you with that. But if you're not willing to make some changes on your own, then we might as well end our contract here. Well. And she was really shell-shocked when I told her those things, but I felt such an urgency to tell her, look, the problem is not the staff. The problem is you. And you've got to learn to communicate differently. So I worked with that doctor for a number of years. I worked with her, I think, 7 or 8 years. And I think she appreciated me being truthful with her in the end. She didn't. It was a bitter pill to swallow in the beginning. But in the end, she appreciated that.
Well, I'm sure those were hard words for you to speak. And she could have just been turned off and gone the other way. But
yes.
Book of Proverbs says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, and it yes. sounds like God really blessed that.
Yes.
Now, as you've been talking, it's clear that the gospel comes across in the advice that you provide, and also just centrally, as you talk about that wonderful dentist that you had that was your boss, it was clear that he was putting others ahead of himself, as Philippians 2 calls us to do. And I just love how the gospel turns us inside out and enables us to focus on the needs of others, and that we're actually happier when we focus on the needs of others than when we're completely self-centered in our approach to life. It's counterintuitive that when you focus on others, you're happier, but it's a truth of the gospel that comes through loud and clear. How would you say your faith has contributed to what you've done over the years, both as a practicing hygienist and now as a strong voice for the profession?
Well, as a Christian, my faith is not a part of me. It's who I am.
Yes.
And I can't, or I won't try to separate my life from my walk with the Lord. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that. There's just no better way to live life. And I see it now more than I ever saw it. I think as my walk with the Lord has some longevity in it now, I see it more now than ever. So, you know, if, and look, as a consultant, I did a little pre-interview to really try to ascertain whether I was going to be a good fit for a particular practice. And when I would ask pertinent questions with a doctor who would call me, if I ascertained in my heart that this person was really, really money driven and they wanted somebody to come in there and show them a bunch of, you know, silver bullets or something to help beef up their practices, I usually would shy away from those. And I would say, I just really don't think I'm a good fit for your practice. Not that the numbers are important. They're very important. Mm-hmm. But when a person's money driven, that's a problem of the heart. Sometimes I didn't discover it early on. I discovered it after I'd already signed a contract with the practice. But the other side of that coin is also, I think the Lord puts us to be salt and light in this world. And just because someone called me, like I had one client who met with me over dinner. He said, "You may not want me for your client." And I said, "Why?" And he shared with me that he was homosexual. And, you know, I did not say yay or nay at that meeting, but I went home and I prayed about it. And as a Christian, I thought he really needs help and he's asked for my help. And the Lord has probably just put me right in his path to help him. And, you know, I had the greatest working relationship with him. I was able to witness to him. I was able to share some things with him, and I was also able to help him with his practice. He turned out to be one of my, I would call, great clients, because he respected me, but he knew I was a Christian. He knew that. He knew that from our first meeting, because I wanted to pray over the meal. So anyway, I think sometimes the Lord puts us in difficult situations, but sometimes if I would try to be discerning about whether I felt like I was, just because I'm a Christian, there's some things that I would have a harder time with, but all the same, we need to be salt and light.
Yes, yes, well put. Now, Diane, you've been a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations for many years. And as you know, we are currently seeking to begin a dental hygiene specialty section at CMDA so that Christian dental hygienists across the nation can join together and learn from each other, sharing successes and challenges and considering the role that faith can play in our profession. Most of our listeners are dentists, and many of them have hygienists who are seeking to walk with the Lord. Wouldn't it be great if our dentist members would connect their hygienists with CMDA and encourage them to get involved?
Oh, I am very excited about the possibility of a specialty section for dental hygienists inside of CMDA. I tell you, over the years with CMDA, for me personally, it's been a lonely walk, because I've maintained my membership for many years just because I have this strong belief that we need Christian providers to have a voice in healthcare, including dentistry.
Yes.
All the same, there hasn't been that many dental hygienists in it. And I would love to see, this is just like a dream come true for me. So I think of the words of this old song, you know, if we ever needed the Lord before, we sure do need him now. So I am very excited about this possibility.
Well, just to make sure our listeners are aware, if you'd like to greatly bless your hygienist team members, keep in mind that dental practices can provide CMDA group memberships with three people or more and receive 25% off each membership. So if you're interested in pursuing this for your team, email us at dental@cmda.org and we will help you out in terms of connecting them with CMDA. Diane, are there any other thoughts you'd like to share with our members?
I'd like to end with a challenge that every person listening to this today, that as Christ followers, we should do our work as unto the Lord, just like it says in Colossians 3:23, and whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. So I can't think of a better attitude as we serve our patients on a daily basis. Who do I live for? Am I serving God or people through what I do? Well, I hope you're serving both. So this includes praying for our patients and staff members and asking the Lord to give us a servant's heart.
That's a great closing thought, Diane. I can certainly see how you've done that throughout your career. And I pray that God will use you to inspire others to pursue that same command in Colossians. Thanks very much for our time together, Diane, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you.
What a blessing to glean from Diane's wisdom today. I wish that every dentist and every hygienist represented in CDA could hear this podcast. In fact, I'd like to do more than just wish for this. I have a suggestion. If you are a dentist listening to this podcast and you have dental hygienists on your team, share this podcast with them. Who knows how the Lord might use it for their benefit and also for the benefit of your entire patient population. And if I could make one more suggestion, invite your hygienists to join CMDA. You can even pick up their dues, which are pretty minimal, and perhaps they could become part of our brand new dental hygiene specialty section. If you have questions about today's podcast or any other matter related to CMDA, feel free to email us at dental@cmda.org. That's dental@cmda.org. Until next time, God bless.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.